You're listening to a podcast from 702.
And what we're doing at the moment is talking about food fraud. We're joined by Mthokozisi Nkosi, who is the CEO of ASC Consulting. And food fraud takes different presentations. He'll give the examples that they have come across, because I'm certainly curious about what it is that people are doing, what constitutes food fraud. We want your questions. As a consumer, have you come across food that has been interfered with, or products perhaps that didn't live up to the promise, or maybe even dates, the mislabeling, misrepresentation of ingredients, and the mislabeling of dates? You let us know. Is this still something that is ever present after the scandal that broke out a few years ago? 011-883-0702, 31702 for your SMSs, your WhatsApps and voice notes on 072-702-1702. Mthokozisi, thank you very much for joining us and taking us through what is a very frightening prospect, because this is what we consume. So our health is likely to be affected if, for instance, we come into contact with something very dangerous as part of, you know, messing around and tampering with food.
Yes, of course, Azania. Thank you so much for having me on the show. Food fraud, perhaps it's very important to start by explaining what it is exactly. Mm-hmm. And how it differs from food safety before we go deeper. So in terms of food fraud, it must occur when a food or a food product or a beverage is sold to the consumer in a way that deliberately, and that's the key word, it must deliberately mislead the consumer, or you could say deceive the consumer, and whoever is selling the product must get something out of it. So it's usually a deliberate misrepresentation of food for financial gain. So that's how it's defined. When we talk about food safety, that would be the food has spoiled or there is something that is in the food because of the nature of the food, perhaps meat, you know, that you have to keep in your fridge. If you don't, it will spoil and possibly you can get sick out of it. So with food fraud, it's deliberate, and you know exactly what is in the product and you don't disclose that to the consumer. And when a consumer consumes that food, obviously in some time it may not have an impact, but it could also be very dire to the consumer's health. Mm. So there are certainly different categories on how it can affect the consumer, and we certainly can go through them.
Yes. But let's look at some of the examples of cases of food fraud and just the range that has been reported on.
Sure. So with food fraud, it has different categories, and I'll just briefly go through them. The first could be dilution. So where make an example, for example, extra virgin oil, we know that it is a premium product. Mm-hmm. You dilute it with maybe sunflower oil, but you don't disclose that to the consumer. You say it is an extra virgin oil that you are selling, but you are not very clear, or you do not actually say to the consumer that there is sunflower oil in that oil, and you sell it at a premium price. Meanwhile, it is now a blend. It's no longer a product that you have said to the consumer it is. It could also maybe substitute. We have seen cases where maybe tea bags, you take, you know, that out of maybe 10 kilograms of tea bags that you would be packing into individual sachets, you take 20% of that and replace it with grass. You know, grass. You take it from the field knowingly, and then you replace it. But you don't disclose to the consumer that that product is now, you have substituted the actual product with something that is of no value to the consumer, and you sell it. So that is substitution. You are taking something that it's supposed to be, and then you're replacing it with something that is of an inferior product. It may not even be a product. It could be something that has no nutritional value to the consumer, or that could be harmful. And the most cited case would be cow's milk, where it was substituted with water, and then they added melamine. You know, melamine is a plasticizer. It's not supposed to be consumed. And, you know, you replace it with something that could be potentially harmful to the consumer. Mm. And if you remember that incident that was in China, and unfortunately South Africa was also affected because, of course, we're importing those products as well from, we're in a global world. So it's natural that there are some products that would be important. I think about 8 kids died. You know, they died from that incident just because of people being greedy. Then there is another one, concealment. So that's where a company makes a business decision. You know, I'll make an example. So you, as you're working in the laboratory, you tell the company that in this particular product, maybe there's Listeria monocytogen, which is a bacteria that is harmful. Then a company says, you know, it's too much of a, it's too many products. We can't afford to destroy this product. Let's sell it either way. So that is fraud, because now you are selling something that you're not supposed to be selling. You have made a business decision and decided to sell it without really taking into account people's lives. You have not told them that there is something dangerous in this product or there is something that is not supposed to be in the product. So we have seen those incidences as well. And sometimes poultry, the chicken, if you remember, there was a big issue with chickens being injected with brine.
Yes.
And in some cases, up to, 35% of brine where chickens were being injected with. So you are sold 2 kg of frozen chicken. You think that, you know, that chicken, the 2 kg is chicken. Meanwhile, 35% of that is salted water, basically, just because it has been frozen. So you would not be able to detect it. And then you cook it, and then suddenly this small piece,
shrinks,
and you wonder,
yes,
where is the rest? You know, so basically you have paid 2 kg of chicken, and you only have got, 1.2 of the product. That
yes.
is also food.
You know, I have cousins who used to complain a few years ago about a particular vors, you know, and I know even with
yes.
boerewors, what is boerewors and what is not, you know, there's also distinction
yes.
there. But there would be a yeah. local, it's not even a butcher, but a little spaza shop that was also selling this vors. And it just never turned color. The color never changed while it was cooking. It stayed pink. You know, and the question was, what is this substance? What is this meat product that is not behaving like what we're accustomed to, that when you fry it or when you grill it, it will turn, the color will move from that dark pink to more of a brown, you know, but this remained, even before it was cooked, it was bright pink. And even after being cooked, it was bright pink. And so they would often talk about that being quite concerning, that, you know, are we sure about the safety of some of the things that we're eating?
Certainly, Azania. And in 2014, there was an incident with a dye that is called Sudan Red, one dye, which has this bright red color. So it is used, it's a type of color that are normally used in spices. So you find that your meat product is so beautiful. I mean, the color is so bright, it doesn't change. As you may allude to it. So when you then cook it, it's still this bright red because, I mean, it may seem attractive. It's not dull. It's attractive to the consumer, and then the consumer picks it. But, you know, what they find with that dye is that it can cause cancer, and also it can disrupt the development of the embryo or fetus, you know, when a woman is pregnant.
Mm.
But because people are not aware, you know, how many people actually ask that question, like, why is this boerewors not changing color? Why is it remaining so bright pink, you know? Because that may indicate also that that particular substance being used is not being broken down. What is it, you know? So there was also an incident like that in 2014, where Sudan Red 1 dye was used. And it's actually a banned substance. It's not supposed to be used. You're not going to find it in shops, and when you get it, it's illegal. You know, you won't find it at normal retailers. But, of course, one or the other, there are some people who can get hold of it and, you know, and use it in food products.
Yes. Let's take this call from Dingan, calling from Alberton, Togozisi. Hello, Dingan.
Aza.
Hi.
I need to be put mincemeat in sheepskin, right? That people when they make vors.
Yes.
I don't know what this person was putting on it, but when you said brine, the thing would put on literally a strip show. The thing will just shrink and eventually come off, and you'll have the mince all over the brine. That is the one horror story. The other one, you know, even today, I don't buy any meat that's pre-seasoned at the shop. somebody told me that chances are the meat was going off and it was starting to discolor, so they used spices.
To marinate and so on.
Mm-hmm. To marinate it. Truthfully, I don't buy anything that's pre-seasoned. But I love it, that's a sort of switch show.
Thank you, Tigan. I've never heard that one before. Where it takes off its jacket, the meat is all exposed.
Yeah, maybe with, you know, we need to also be very careful what really constitutes food.
Yes.
So if the company has made a decision that this food is going to expire maybe in 2 days' time, and we need to extend the shelf life by marinating, and that's what happens usually. That's why sometimes it's not as fresh when you taste this food that has been marinated, etc. Sometimes it tastes that it's not fresh, but they have not lied to you in that instance. They have told you that it is marinated, you know, and all that, so they've extended the shelf life. And they wouldn't say that it is a fresh product, for an example. So there's a thin line, what is food fraud? So food fraud, you are lying to the consumer, you are going to get money out of it. And that is food fraud. But if they have been very clear with you, then that is fine.
Yes, yes.
For an example, you mentioned boerewors. You know, there's a regulation for boerewors in South Africa that details exactly what is it that is boerewors. You know, for an example, a boerewors is not contained. It's 90% total meat. You know, it's very specific that it at least 90% of what is in the casing must be meat. So if it now, you know, 89%, 71%, then that is not boerewors. Of course, that is inclusive of a fat, that it shouldn't be more than 30%. So when you sell something and say it's a boerewors, but it doesn't comply, then you align to the consumer because that is basically a killer. It's no longer boerewors. Yeah.
Okay. So Tomo, Skumbuzo Tomo has sent us a message saying the question of food fraud, donkey and kangaroo meat of late is a serious thing in fast food restaurants. The vors is mentioned at times is stuffed with baboon meat. Oh, I've never heard these two examples. The issue of substandard goods and the counterfeit products in high end shopping malls is rampant. Please, let's also extend this conversation by inviting both the NRCS and the NCC, because you'll be shocked by what is happening at the moment. Are you familiar with these substitutes and these stories?
Yes, certainly. You know, what is it's very important that the person, Skumbuzo, has mentioned substandard, because that is also something that you'd find, you know, where you are using something that is of cheaper material than the superior product, and then you sell it as a premium product. So that is also another incident of food fraud. But the most prone at the moment that we have picked up, we used to do food safety blitz, is mislabeling, where people do not really tell the consumer when the food is expiring, or when it has expired, they change the date of expiry and indicate a new one. So we found a lot of those incidences where, you know, the people have got a labeling machine. They simply change the date. At one point, we found frozen chicken that would expire. I think that was in 2018, but it had a shelf life of close to 5 years. And nobody questioned how come a chicken has a shelf life of up to 5 years. You know, why? How could that be? So also, as consumers, we because you have got a full right, remember that as they are selling you a product, you are also paying for it. So it's your right to question these things, that why is it so? And it's rampant because we also cannot ask those questions, even though the regulations give us the right to ask, you know, whether a food premises that is trading, do they have the certificate of acceptability that they can, you know, before they trade. That is one of the examples where we can hold food companies and beverages as well
responsible.
So
let's look at that for a moment, because I've always thought that South Africa, because of our tight regulations, that we wouldn't have a rampant problem of food fraud. Are there gaps? And does it mean that there are also low barriers to entry into the food space that maybe would allow people who don't stick to these regulations to enter the space and have products that maybe are out there due to great marketing?
I would think that we do have regulations. But, you know, we are South Africa, I must applaud the Department of Health that they are constantly trying to update. But there are some things where the regulations are not explicit, you know, where they state explicitly what is it in terms of compliance that companies need to comply with. And food fraud is more rampant than most of us seem to think. And even big companies as well, you know, although they have got food safety audits that they have annually, but they may sometimes find a way to do so, to regulate food. In terms of regulations, although they are there, but because of the lack of enforcement in terms of the environmental health practitioners, they've got too much on their plate already. Mm-hmm. And some of them are not really experts in terms of things like food fraud, food safety, etc. They don't really look into that. They just basically would look at the food premises. Are you producing food in a safe manner? Mm. And in terms of also the sophistication of methods being used, you know, if I were to tell you now, lemon juice, 100% lemon juice, you wouldn't know if I've added something there, whether it's not 100% or not. So it's very sophisticated. So it needs a very proactive action from the government side, where they regularly take samples from the shelf and test, you know, randomly. Mm-hmm. And once that is publicized, it will discourage anyone from doing so. And they shouldn't only focus on big retailers. They should look at those corner shops. And most of them are not compliant. And that differs from municipality to municipality, because the local authority, which would be your municipality, is the one that is supposed to be doing so.
And we know our municipalities, yes, don't seem to have the capacity.
Yes, yes. So that is the biggest factor. If the municipalities or the environmental health departments were actually doing those visits, and in some cases you'll find that a company was last visited by an environmental health practitioner for, 10 years ago, and they need them to come. You know, you ask them, come and give us an update. So that's how it's defined. When we talk about food safety, that would be the food has spoiled or there is something that is in the food because of the nature of the food, perhaps meat, you know, that you have to keep in your fridge. If you don't, it will spoil and possibly you can get sick out of it. So with food fraud, it's deliberate, and you know exactly what is in the product and you don't disclose that to the consumer. And when a consumer consumes that food, obviously in some time it may not have an impact, but it could also be very dire to the consumer's health. Mm. So there are certainly different categories on how it can affect the consumer, and we certainly can go through them.
Yes, yes. But let's look at some of the examples of cases of food fraud and just the range that has been reported on.
Sure. So with food fraud, it has different categories, and I'll just briefly go through them. The first could be dilution. So where I'll make an example, for example, extra virgin oil, we know that it is a premium product. Mm-hmm. You dilute it with maybe sunflower oil, but you don't disclose that to the consumer. You say it is an extra virgin oil that you are selling, but you are not very clear, or you do not actually say to the consumer that there is sunflower oil in that oil, and you sell it at a premium price. Meanwhile, it is now a blend. It's no longer a product that you have said to the consumer it is. It could also maybe substitute. We have seen cases where maybe tea bags, you take out of maybe 10 kilograms of tea bags that you would be packing into individual sachets, you take 20% of that and replace it with grass. You know, grass. You take it from the field knowingly, and then you replace it. But you don't disclose to the consumer that product is now, you have substituted the actual product with something that is of no value to the consumer, and you sell it. So that is substitution. You are taking something that it's supposed to be, and then you're replacing it with something that is often inferior. Product, it may not even be a product. It could be something that has no nutritional value to the consumer, or that could be harmful. And the most cited case would be cow's milk, where it was substituted with water, and then they added melamine. You know, melamine is a plasticizer. It's not supposed to be consumed. And, you know, you replace it with something that could be potentially harmful to the consumer.
Mm.
And if you remember that incident that was in China, and unfortunately South Africa was also affected because, of course, we're importing those products as well from, we are in a global world. So it's natural that there are some products that could be imported. I think about 8 kids died. You know, they died from that incident just because of people being greedy. Then there is another one, concealment. So that's where a company makes a business decision. You know, I'll make an example. So you, as a, you're working in the laboratory, you tell the company that in this particular product, maybe there's Listeria monocytogen, which is a bacteria that is harmful. Then a company says, you know, it's too much of a, it's too many products. We can't afford to destroy this product. Let's sell it either way. So that is fraud, because now you are selling something that you're not supposed to be selling. You have made a business decision and decided to sell it without really taking into account people's lives. You have not told them that there is something dangerous in this product or there is something that is not supposed to be in the product. So we have seen those incidents as well. And sometimes poultry, the chicken. If you remember, there was a big issue with chickens being injected with brine.
Yes.
And in some cases, up to what 35% of brine where chickens were being injected with. So you are sold 2 kg of frozen chicken. You think that, you know, that chicken, the 2 kg is chicken. Meanwhile, 35% of that is salted water, basically, just because it has been frozen. So you would not be able to detect it. And then you cook it, and then suddenly this small piece,
shrinks,
and you wonder,
yes,
where is the rest? You know, so basically you have paid two kg of chicken, and you only have got, what, 1.2 of the product. That
yes.
is also food for.
You know, I have cousins who used to complain a few years ago about a particular vors, you know, and I know even with boerewors, what is boerewors and what is not, you know, there's also a distinction there. But there would be a local, it's not even a butcher, but a little spaza shop that was also selling this vors. And it just never turned color. The color never changed while it was cooking. It stayed pink. You know, and the question was, what is this substance? What is this meat product that is not behaving like what we're accustomed to, that when you fry it or when you grill it, it will turn, the color will move from that dark pink to more of a brown, you know, but this remained, even before it was cooked, it was bright pink. And even after being cooked, it was bright pink. And so they would often talk about that being quite concerning, that, you know, are we sure about the safety of some of the things that we're eating?
Certainly, Azania. And in 2014, there was an incident with a dye that is called Sudan Red, one dye, which has this bright red color. So it is used, it's a type of color that are normally used in spices. So you find that your meat product is so beautiful. I mean, the color is so bright, it doesn't change. As you may allude to it. So when you then cook it, it's still this bright red because, I mean, it may seem attractive. It's not dull. It's attractive to the consumer, and then the consumer picks it. But, you know, what they find with that dye is that it can cause cancer, and also it can disrupt the development of the embryo or fetus, you know, when a woman is pregnant.
Mm.
But because people are not aware, you know, how many people actually ask that question, like, why is this boerewors not changing color? Why is it remaining so bright pink, you know? Because that may indicate also that that particular substance being used is not being broken down. What is it, you know? So there was also an incident like that in 2014, where Sudan Red one dye was used. And it's actually a banned substance, not supposed to be used. You're not going to find it in shops, and when you get it, it's illegal. You know, you won't find it at normal retailers. But of course, one or the other, there are some people who can get hold of it and, you know, and use it in food products.
Yes. Let's take this call from Dingane calling from Alberton, Thokozisi. Hello, Dingane.
Aza.
Hi.
I need to be put mincemeat in sheepskin, right? That sheep when they make balls.
Yes.
I don't know what this person was putting on it, but when you said brine, the thing would put on literally a strip show. That thing, it'll just it'll shrink and, and eventually come off, and you'll have the mint all over the price end. That is the one horror story. The other one, you know, even today, I don't buy any meat that's pre-seasoned at the shop. Somebody told me that it, chances are the meat was going off and it was starting to discolor, so they use spices.
To marinate and so on. Mm-hmm.
To marinate it. To this day, I don't buy anything that's pre-seasoned. But I thought that was that person is fictional.
Thank you, Tigan. I've never heard that one before. Where it takes off its jacket, the meat is all exposed.
Yeah, maybe with, you know, we need to also be very careful what really constitutes food.
Yes.
So if the company has made a decision that this food is going to expire maybe in 2 days' time, and we need to extend the shelf life by marinating, and that's what happens usually. That's why sometimes it's not as fresh when you taste this food that has been marinated, etc. Sometimes it tastes that it's not fresh, but they have not lied to you in that instance. They have told you that it is marinated, you know, and all that, so they've extended the shelf life. And they wouldn't say that it is a fresh product, for example. So there's a thin line, what is food fraud? So food fraud, you are lying to the consumer, you are going to get money out of it. And that is food fraud. But if they have been very clear with you, then that is fine.
Yes, yes.
For example, you mentioned boerewors. You know, there's a regulation for boerewors in South Africa that details exactly what is it that is boerewors. You know, for example, a boerewors must contain at least 90% total meat. You know, it's very specific that it, at least 90% of what is in the casing must be meat. So if it now, you know, 89%, 71%, then that is not boerewors. Of course, that is inclusive of a fat, that it shouldn't be more than 30%. So when you sell something and say it's a boerewors, but it doesn't comply, then you are lying to the consumer because that is basically a killer. It's no longer boerewors. Yeah.
Okay. So Tomo, Skumbuzo Tomo has sent us a message saying the question of food fraud, donkey and kangaroo meat of late is a serious thing in fast food restaurants. The vors is mentioned at times is stuffed with baboon meat. Oh, I've never heard these two examples. The issue of substandard goods and the counterfeit products in high end shopping malls is rampant. Please, let's also extend this conversation by inviting both the NRCS and the NCC, because you'll be shocked by what is happening at the moment. Are you familiar with these substitutes and these stories?
Yes, certainly. You know, what is it's very important that the person, Skumbuzo, has mentioned substandard, because that is also something that you'd find, you know, where you are using something that is a cheaper material than the superior product, and then you sell it as a premium product. So that is also another incident of food fraud. But the most prone at the moment that we have picked up, we used to give food safety blitz, is mislabeling, where people do not really tell the consumer when the food is expiring, or when it has expired, they change the date of expiry and indicate a new one. So we found a lot of those incidences where, you know, the people have got a labeling machine. They simply change the date. At one point, we found frozen chicken that would expire. I think that was in 2018, but it had a shelf life of close to 5 years. And nobody questioned how come a chicken has a shelf life of up to 5 years. You know, why? How could that be? So also, as consumers, we because you have got a full right, remember that as they are selling your product, you are also paying for it. So it's your right to question these things, that why is it so? And it's rented because we also cannot ask those questions, even though the regulations give us the right to ask, you know, whether a food premises that is trading, do they have the certificate of acceptability that they can, you know, before they trade. That is one of the examples where we can hold food companies and beverages as well
responsible. So let's look at that for a moment, because I've always thought that South Africa, because of our tight regulations, that we wouldn't have a rampant problem of food fraud. Are there gaps? And does it mean that there are also low barriers to entry into the food space that maybe would allow people who don't stick to these regulations to enter the space and have products that maybe are out there due to great marketing?
I would think that we do have regulations, but, you know, we are South Africa, I must applaud the Department of Health that they are constantly trying to update. But there are some things where the regulations are not explicit, you know, where they state explicitly what is it in terms of compliance that companies need to comply with. And food fraud is more rampant than most of us seem to think. And even big companies as well, you know, although they have got food safety audits that they have annually, but they may sometimes find a way to do so, to regulate food. In terms of regulations, although they are there, but because of the lack of enforcement in terms of the environmental health practitioners, they've got too much on their plate already.
Mm-hmm.
And they some of them are not really experts in terms of things like food fraud, food safety, etc. They don't really look into that. They just basically would look at the food premises. Are you producing food in a safe manner?
Mm.
And in terms of also the sophistication of methods being used, you know, if I were to tell you now, lemon juice, 100% lemon juice, you wouldn't know if I've added something there, whether it's not 100% or not. So it's very sophisticated. So it needs a very proactive action from the government side, where they regularly take samples from the shelf and test, you know, randomly.
Mm-hmm.
And once that is publicized, it will discourage anyone from doing so. And they shouldn't only focus on big retailers. They should look at those corner shops. And most of them are not compliant. And that differs from municipality to municipality, because the local authority, which would be your municipality, is the one that is supposed to be doing so.
And we know our municipalities, yes, don't seem to have the capacity.
Yes. So that is the biggest factor. If the municipalities or the environmental health departments were actually doing those visits, and in some cases, you'll find that a company was last visited by an environmental health practitioner for, 10 years ago.
Mm.
And they need them to come. You know, you ask them, come and give us an updated certificate of compliance or acceptability. They are nowhere to be seen. They take money. So usually we are more reactive than proactive. And
okay.
That's the biggest issue here.
Yes, yeah. Let's squeeze this one in from Sue in Kensington. Hello, Sue.
Hi. I'd just like to point out that a Coca-Cola, anything smaller than 500 mils has got sugar in it. You know, the 500 mil bottle, look at the Buddy Coke and the cans. It says original taste at the top.
Okay.
The bigger ones than that say original taste, and then underneath that it's got less sugar. Now, that what they've done is they've put artificial sweeteners in the bigger one.
Oh, but
how can it be original taste if it's got artificial sweetness?
Oh, it's a pity, Sue. I don't know enough about that. Mtokozisi, I don't know if you want to venture an answer.
Yeah, I think that one will be very deep, because if they say original taste, that is a subjective. You know, it's a subjective parameter. So they could say that they have done the sensory tasting, and the taste, although they've put in an artificial sweetener, but based on the sampling that they did or the sensory panel, there was no difference in terms of whether it contains sugar and artificial sweetener.
Okay.
So they could not detect any difference. So it's a food quality aspect where you look at the subjective feedback from your sensory panel. In that way, they are not on the wrong, because they try to emulate the original taste. And from whatever that they did, the panel, then it was, unless you as a consumer feel that it doesn't taste the same, and then you question that, then possibly there is something to do.
You know, the choice of words is also important, right? Thank
yes.
you so much, Mtokozisi. I want to thank you for joining us this afternoon with those eye-opening examples.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me, Azania.
That's the CEO of ASC Consultants, and they specialize in food safety and public health as we're looking at food fraud. So what happens in China does matter. You know, when you think of the cow's milk, melamine, plasticizer addition there that caused the deaths of 8 kids, it does happen. It does happen, and it matters to us because we import, I think, roughly 45% of our food imports come from Asia. This is the last figure I checked on. So we do have to worry about what is coming from other territories.